Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Okay, I am here with Grandmaster Timur Gadeev, coming live from Kazan. He is a globe-trotting grandmaster in addition to a blindfold world expert. Timur, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hey, thank you, Ben. Hello to everybody.
So you've been making a lot of waves, obviously, with the amazing feats you're putting on with your blindfold chess. And we'll get to that eventually. But right now, I want to talk to you about your travels. So you're coming to us live from Kazan in Russia. What brings you there?
Well, Kazan is actually the place where a lot of my relatives are nowadays. So, you know, it's actually my homeland, so to speak, in terms of my nationality. So I'm not Uzbek, I'm Tatar. So that's Kazan is the capital of Tatarstan.
Okay, and how long are you going to be visiting?
Well, it's been about 3 days. Actually, today was kind of fun. I get to run a cosmic race, so it was just a 10k race I was running, but it was in celebration or kind of in preparation for the day of cosmonauts here in Russia, which is supposed to be April 12th. So we had, maybe 100 people running.
Wow. Yeah, and for listeners, we're recording on April 8th. This will be released a little bit later. But Timur is known for a lot of unusual activities for chess grandmasters, I would say. Skydiving, marathons, anything else we should mention, Timur?
Well, as far as running, I actually, a number of times that I pushed the limits and ran a marathon. And I imagine I've done maybe about 7 of them, which one of them was actually an extended marathon amounting to 43 miles as opposed to a regular 24 miles total.
Wow, that's crazy. And we'll get to the marathon of your blindfold chess, but when you go running, Timur, do you listen to music or do you just enjoy the sounds of nature?
I do the later both, I think the former, I think enjoying the sounds of nature and just, even in places that are not particularly, endearing, it's still kind of, interesting to just kind of see what's going on around you. And hear the natural sounds, whatever the natural world represents nowadays, because, you know, there's people who run in the streets of Manhattan, and that's, you know, well, I guess you could get up to Central Park and run up there. But, you know, I do tend to like to take in the everything that's going on around, including all the sounds.
And you grew up in Uzbekistan. Where did you grow up, in the city or the country?
Well, I grew up in the capital, and you know, it's transformed quite a bit for, you know, introducing. I think nowadays there's a lot more cars. Back when I was growing up, it was a lot. You know, because I think public transportation was more common.
Okay, and what was the chess culture like, Timur? How did you get into chess in Uzbekistan?
Well, chess was something that surrounded me and inspired me as a, you know, kind of like a family experience, where my grandfather taught me how to play chess, and then my father, you know, gave me tips and, you know, actually showed me a couple tricks. He'd catch me generally, then I learn, you know, how to play against those. And, you know, we had a couple, you know, quite a few interesting battles till I actually started to win games against them consistently, which he would probably be about 1600 level at his best. So, you know, he gave me a lot. And then when I turned 7, I had a chess class, or like a, you know, like a little after school program, which actually, you know, we had you know, the chess time throughout the school whenever was a good time to get together. I had a chess coach who was very encouraging and kind of fun, and telling interesting stories and jokes, and, you know, it was great to have that kind of environment. And coincidentally, just right across, well, actually in the same apartment complex, I had a classmate who we went to the chess class together as well. She actually kept beating me for a while until I figured out her secrets and, you know, gained some experience. But her mother was actually Uzbekistan women's champion, so she was an international master. So it was like everything was, you know, and then the most important person in my later as a career, as I started getting better and better rapidly, was Georgi Konstantinovich Borisenko, who is a Soviet master, and he trained essentially two women's world champions and you know, many of the top grandmasters like Taimanov and Furman, and you know, they collaborated and trained together. Georg Konstantinovich had great results where he beat Tal, you know, wow. Smyslov, and, you know, a lot of those top champions a number of times. So having a chess coach like that is certainly a big advantage in achieving great results fast.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Timur is just an amazing chess player, been as high as around number 70 in the world, and currently 11th highest rated in the U.S. So speaking of your coach as a kid, how did you hook up with him?
Well, my first chess coach, he was just out there at the school, and that was, you know, it was great, you know, just have that kind of proximity to learning chess the best way you can. At times you see kids struggling because of the style of teaching or the style of learning that they, you know, would probably benefit most. And I think that fun style of learning, especially at the beginning, where things are light and, you know, it's like the time and sacrifice and, you know, just interesting stories, you know, kind of dominate over the material, and just kind of more of a structured approach. I think that was great. And later, as I had the chess coach, the Soviet master, Georgi Konstantinovich Borisenko, his approach, as opposed to Alexei Mikhailovich, his approach was obviously more fundamental, you know, based on the the essentials of you know, the school of chess, and you know, it's like the positional concepts, and you know, that was really great examples of how I could play better, because a lot of times we went over my games, and he would give me suggestions, and it would be, things would be crystal clear almost immediately as we you know, as I showed some of the ideas, and he says, well, here's where you can improve. And indeed, I you know, carried the greater experience from one lesson to the next, and actually had a lot of time that I spent on my own studying chess. I think ultimately that aside from having great coaches, that at the very least shows your commitment to conquering the world of chess, which is tremendous. It's immense. There's so much to learn, so much to experience before you get all those essentials, before you, you know, build the base. As a grandmaster, I think nowadays it's a lot of the opening preparation that you're supposed to undergo when you're starting out. It's, you know, it's like five, six different elements, you know, in the end game and the opening and the middle game and the tactics, you know. It's, and I tend to just pick up a chess book and just go from cover to cover, you know, in a matter of about a week, and then maybe share some of the ideas with my chess coaches.
Yeah, I think the fact that you're self-motivated probably shows through in the fact that you have so many other interests, and the fact that you've sort of taken on this entrepreneurial endeavor of playing these amazing blindfold exhibitions. But before we get to that, just to wrap up your youth development. So you, I imagine, were one of the top players as a youth in Uzbekistan, and then you eventually made your way to the States. How did that happen?
The opportunity came as a part of my desire, and you know, something that I was really hoping and envisioning. You know, it's an opportunity to come out and study in the United States, which, you know, was the next logical step in my, you know, development. And obviously, I had to focus, and with a similar amount of dedication, focus on learning and learning the language. English language, and it seemed like mathematics was important in some of the exams, so I did that. And then the opportunity came around as I actually kind of accomplished the major step in my chess development, where I became the became grandmaster at the age of 15, turning 16. I had about a year to go before entering college. There were some options all around, including Uzbekistan. I think there was Ireland. now that I recollect, there's also St. Petersburg, Russia.
Wow.
I had an opportunity to actually discuss, you know, the very details of coming out and also playing for the team. So I ended up picking Brownsville, Texas for my first destination. Actually, even though I kind of did bounce around, going to UMBC and then going back to Brownsville, I did end up getting a degree from UTB, which was business administration and marketing, just a few years ago.
So it must have been quite a culture shock to go from Uzbekistan to the midst of Texas. Could you tell us a little bit about how that felt and if it was a difficult transition for you?
Well, kind of made it a little bit smoother, I imagine, is just the general experience of, you know, going to chess competitions where I would meet players, people from all around the world, and, you know, practice English, maybe pick up some ideas. So you know, I traveled to India a number of times, you know, places around Asia like Malaysia, and then Europe. You know, I went to Paris and Spain. I think a lot of the chess players are, especially a lot of the young ones, are super fortunate to have that kind of experience available to them. I think, well, back in Uzbekistan, the kids are really praying that they get a spot in the championship, and with a very tough competition, you know, there's consistently trying to work their way up. Now, as far as coming to the United States, obviously, indeed, it was a culture, you know, it's a different culture, you know, different people. And actually, Brownsville, among all the places in the United States, the Rio Grande Valley, it's also kind of a different place compared to other places in the United States, just because of the confluence of, you know, obviously the Americans and the American and Mexican culture. So, you know, I had you know, the opportunity to learn quite a bit of Spanish. Actually, a lot of people just speak Spanish there.
Wow.
So, you know, that was also kind of the part of this cultural experience, which I totally embraced and, you know, worked to understand and get better. And I think my English improved. It's among the advantages and disadvantages, I would say it was about 90% for the better, you know, as far as, you know, embracing new opportunities in the United States.
Yeah, it seems like you have an adventurous spirit. So I guess like a lot of people might be overwhelmed by so much change. But based on what you've done subsequently, I think that it seems like it was probably up your alley. So did you how was the chess study at Brownsville? Were you pretty much self-directed or did you have coaching? And how did your chess progress while you were there?
Well, it was great as the chess program. It was undergoing its own changes. We had a grandmaster chess coach in place, quite a prominent figure in chess education among club players, I imagine. Roman Dzhendzhikashvili.
Yes, so, of course. Yeah, legend.
Yeah, so he was giving us some training. Now, I got a little bit from him. I feel like later on when I actually got back to Brownsville, it was chess coach Ronan Harsby. Mm-hmm. And Ronan indeed made a difference in terms of my approach to chess and just general inspiration to bring up my game. You know, his general saying was like, hey, you know, you're at 2600. Oh, and you're actually a 2700 level player. You just gotta, you know, work on your openings. You know, just to polish up your style. Now, that kind of, you know, that inspired me to work my way up. And I think I kind of did it in a very, easygoing manner, which put very little pressure on me to perform, but rather, I kind of embraced the sense of anticipation that something good may happen, kind of like the result at the North American Open. I believe I got 8.5 points out of 9, which a pretty killer result, considering I did play 5, maybe 6 grandmasters in that tournament. So from 2600, I jumped up to 2680, you know, make it very close to 2700. So that's that was kind of my experience actually transitioning from mostly just playing a lot of online poker, which was I was doing for a while
poker player. We can't get through an interview on the Perpetual podcast without talking about poker. So are you still playing or done with that?
Got discouraged by the slow pace of the game. You just got to wait. I think 95% of the time that you got to throw the hand away. So there's opportunities that arise. And if you're playing worthwhile stakes, I think it's great just in terms of the income. Now, right. Most importantly, obviously, how you experience the game, what you get out of it. And just recently, I ended up playing I don't remember, like 10 or 11 hour session. And I went to, I believe, 5 or 6 different casinos along the strip.
Just to make it interesting. You know, your online footprint makes it kind of hard to pin down where you live, but I know you've got some Vegas ties because you played for the Vegas Pro Chess League and that's where you did your blindfold exhibition. So do you have like a place you call home currently?
I say just in terms of the more official kind of like or, you know, just the main destinations along my, you know, kind of going back home would be Las Vegas and Kansas, where Kansas would be the Lindsborg Karpov Chess School, where actually my mother is teaching. So whenever I get a chance, it's kind of a tougher destination than compared to like Vegas, because you know, it's tougher to, you know, it should be easy really, because you know, it's like the heart of America where a lot of the planes should be connecting. There should be a lot of great connecting points, but that's not the case, maybe because you know, there's not as many people, and you know, a lot of the people would just drive instead of flying. So for me, it's like a lot of times the my travel destination, whereas Vegas, let's say, it's just it's beautiful. It's got great connecting points. Always there's always good flights going anywhere around the country. So you know, it's it's kind of an adventure for me in a way that I do tend to budget where I'm gonna go. If it's too expensive, I end up really finding alternative ways. Or at times, if you know, let's say I went from Germany to Portugal for no particular reason other than the fact that the ticket was costing like 10 euros, I think. And then I went to Seville and Barcelona and Ibiza. And then, you know, heading on for, you know, maybe under $50 for all those destinations. I don't know. There's those great sales that you can just travel for $5 or $10 flying across the world. So
you're making me jealous.
I like those.
Nice.
So I take a chance.
So Timur, when you're in Vegas, do you have an apartment there, or are you just crashing with friends, or like where do you live when you're in what we would call your home bases?
Well, in Vegas, I used to have an apartment that was actually a beautiful place when I played the Millionaire Open. That was just right across the street, so I ended up just walking through Cosmopolitan and over to Planet Hollywood. So the place was adjacent to Aria, and I had like a kind of set of apartments. A lot of times people couldn't believe it. It's like, oh, where are we going? It's like, it's an apartment. That's like where a lot of people live on a regular basis, and it's just kind of a cool spot with rooftop pool and a jacuzzi and sauna and the gym. And I said, hey, you know, I like this, but you know, actually at one point I ended up maybe traveling 3 weeks out of the months going places, even though I like my place in Vegas, kind of a nice home base to come back and, you know, maybe have the opportunity to focus. But after a while I realized it was just a extra expense along with the car and the motorcycle, you know, which require maintenance. So I might get some of those back, but just at this point, that's kind of what it is. I just move on, and you know, whenever I get a chance, I may stay over at my friend's place, or you know, just always opportunities out there.
So you got rid of all your stuff?
Okay. Yeah.
Wow, minimalist lifestyle. Alex Yermolinsky would be proud.
Well, I'm kind of trying to work my way up to just carrying everything I need in one backpack. So
how close are you?
Well, now I gotta get a formal jacket and, you know, the formal attire for an event I have going on in one of the old legendary clubs in London. So it was established in 1830. So they don't mess around. You coming out with the jeans and shirts. So you're supposed to, you know, bring in the jacket and the tie, I imagine. So I'm kind of just, you know, being proactive and trying to figure out how I'm probably not going to be able to fit it in the backpack. So, I mean, it's probably not going to be a good idea. So, you know, there's always the you know, the additional components to life that kind of make minimalism challenge your idea or the concept of minimalism. One thing actually that's kind of a drastic is I plan to let go of a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is as I'm just fascinated with you know, some of the applications that you can use to call internationally, and just keep up a communication with just people all around the world, and it just makes it really amazing. You can send messages. Really, it's just about free, and there's great international plans, and just communication is wonderful considering how much I travel and how awesome it is to be able to connect with people around the world. I think it's kind of crazy to be able to actually take a chance and let go of you know, this form of this well-established built-in form of communication, kind of like an extension of the arm, your cell phone. People lose their cell phone, or you know, they leave it at home and they freak out. And I mean, I kind of do too, but I'm just curious to see how that, you know, not having a cell phone will affect my lifestyle. I don't know, my thinking, maybe the way my time is spent.
Yeah, well, you know, Wesley So has shed his cell phone, so maybe it'll help your chest too. Go ahead.
I think there's different lifestyles. I think for Wesley, I don't know him that well, just in terms of his personal details. But I imagine especially if you're a professional chess player, or you know, just someone who really just dedicates themselves to one thing, and you know, just is able to really focus in and make that happen, I think that's great. You know, maybe like scientific research, or kind of on the other form of spectrum, where you just kind of go into the woods and just disappear, and then, well, what the hell do you need a cell phone for? So for me, I think it's a little bit tough in terms of just being able to actually still stay in touch, considering the pace of my travel and you know, all the opportunities along the way. It's kind of a tough dilemma to be able to let go of. Actually, social media as well. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it's got to be tough because you also have to plan business opportunities and stuff like that. But maybe you could get one and keep it turned off for the most part. But I want to get back to you mentioned going to a club in London. So when you go to all these different places, are you going to lots of clubs, or is this just sort of like a certain place that you want to get to?
I had the vision to do that, to come out and spend time in Great Britain. And it's kind of a good adventure to try out along the way, going back to US, coming back from Russia, which my trip to Uzbekistan and you know, Kazakhstan, where I actually ended up doing an event, it was quite spontaneous as well. So I'd say it's about 50-50 for me when I go and do something. Actually, probably more so structured around my events, but still, I'll go explore, or you know, just try out a new destination. Kind of like the way I went to Stockholm, Sweden, for a few weeks, just to hang out with my friends who, you know, kind of having get together and say, "Hey, come on out." I say, "Okay." It's going to be kind of expensive, and you know, trying to you know, work out a budget in a place like Stockholm. But then I also considered, well, maybe there's some benefits to it as in terms of not just having fun, but maybe I can put together something chess-wise. And I actually was very successful with it, connecting with, as it turned out, just some wonderful people, great friends from Sweden, including Ingmar Falk, who puts together, he's kind of like the new person in charge of promotion and tech. So he, you know, ended up helping me put together this blindfold exhibition match. We had all the DGT set up, all the technology. I met a lot of great, you know, kids and parents and coaches, and yeah, it was kind of fun. But that was kind of a spontaneous trip, which turned into a blindfold chess trip, and just sharing my vision and kind of promoting chess in the world.
So, what is your vision?
I think the ultimate mastery is got to be what you should aim for in anything you do, in anything that you envision to be your ultimate call in life. Well, as far as blindfold chess, I think it should be fairly obvious for me at least that I have a certain predisposition to be able to play a blindfold chess and, you know, excel at it. And this is something that I enjoy. You can be good at something, like, let's say, for example, competitive chess. I'm good at it, but then I'm not willing to dedicate my life to becoming world chess champion. I think it might still be available to me, that journey. It might be a lot tougher than, you know, had I made the decision, like, let's say, back when I was 16 and just became a grandmaster. But, you know, it's like, you know, whatever you get at the point in your life, say, I was watching a movie about Rashid Nezhmetdinov, and that's the local Tatar champion. He was five times the Soviet champion, and actually along the ranks of, you know, Botvinnik, I believe Spassky. I think some of those guys actually didn't became grandmasters at much later ages. And, you know, whenever the that opportunity comes along, you can try it out. Now, at this point, aside from blindfold chess, I have other passions, kind of for extreme sports in particular. And, you know, despite, you know, being almost 30 at this point, I think this is something that I could take on, and I have certain predisposition to, well, at least just, you know, try it out and have some fun with it. So, yes. But, you know, ultimately, I think just one point that I wanted to make is just the fact that, you know, when you want to make something happen, it's great to have that psychology that you're really going to dedicate your life to it. And among those things is definitely blindfold chess.
Yeah, so I think most listeners will have at least some awareness of the amazing feats you've done. But just to review, so in December you did a simultaneous blindfold exhibition in Las Vegas, where you played 48 people over 19 hours. And what was your score? And do I have those details right?
Well, that was the ultimate event that I was able to pull off, and in with the help of great mentors, friends, all the people who came out and actually took on the challenge. So the ultimate victory was enough to get me into the book of World Guinness World Records, so which was, you know, certified and established just a couple of weeks ago. Now I ended up making 7 draws, 6 losses, and 35 wins, which ended up being 80% victories, and that was the requirement for official World Guinness record, which previously Mark Lang played 46 games and Miguel Neidorf played 45 games. So I excelled and took over those records. At this point, Mark, he's a FIDE master from Germany. He's not even a grandmaster, which makes it even more fascinating as to understanding the power of blindfold chess, like, or the quality that you can develop and be able to succeed at it, like, say, Koltanowski, compared to somebody like Alekhine, who is the world champion. You have Koltanowski and examples of Mark Lang, who are masters and strong international, you know, level masters, but they're still able to multitask and play that many games.
Yeah, it's just a staggering feat, and it's funny. For those who don't know, I mean, I think most people will have seen some coverage. This was covered in. You were on the cover of Chess Life, and they wrote your friends Jennifer Valens and Jay Stallings wrote a really nice article summarizing the preparation that went into this and the actual feat. And you had a good write up in New in Chess. So, not to mention, there's coverage all over the internet. So, I think people who want to dig into what you accomplished, we'll have ways to do this. But so why don't you tell us a little bit more about what your future vision entails for your blindfold travels?
Well, interestingly, Mark actually wants to challenge my record and bring up the stakes and play 50 games. So that will certainly influence us to, say my next step.
That's funny.
And, it would obviously be
the blinds are going up, right?
the blinds are going up. So, it would be greater number of boards, but I think even more so. At times, I'll have organizers who are super enthusiastic, and even at times it'll be like, "Well, yeah, let's do like a blindfold match." They're like, "Okay, well, awesome." So how many are you gonna play? So you're gonna play like 50 of them, or we just have a bunch of kids lined up. Let's do it. I'm like, "Yeah, but it's not like a matter of lining up 50 participants. The ultimate world record event is." Cool. I mean, it's super complex, as the event that we put together. For one, it's just the duration of the effort is just tremendous. So having I'm less worried about my experience sustaining the rhythm and the good health and the energy and the focus, concentration. Obviously, I'll be preparing better and better and get stronger at this with every event opportunity and as the time goes by. The players' experience, where they have so much time on their hands, especially between the moves, I'd want to create this, make it a festival with maybe other presentations going on, maybe like a little bit of technology where they can, there's screens like along these kind of like convention hall where they can go see like a grandmaster presentation or play like some kind of a cool chess related game, or maybe have some Mensa people, have some performers and magic people, and just make it truly amazing. In between the rounds, I could have between, let's say, several moves that I play on, which could take, three moves could take up to like 2.5 hours for me to play initially. If I go take a break, I may have, they may have like some performers come in and just, makes this interesting. So this is not just another, continental chess tournament. This is really, just something innovative and just something truly unique that I'd want to put together and make happen and make it better every time. I think, even in terms of my the ways I could, I do the spin bike.
Amazing.
I spin the wheels of a stationary bike as I play my matches, which helps me keep concentration. I see there's like opportunities to create some variety in terms of that, and potentially sponsorship opportunities for one of those spin bike or even war spin bike companies sponsor that, like the aqua bikes.
Right.
We could have like a little aquarium and maybe set up the bike and I could be spinning and within that just make it kind of cool, interesting, more spectacular. Just work through all the details, how the moves are executed, just everything could be, at least, 10 to 30% better, more interesting, more innovative. Especially, I think this is the experience that I share with the world. We had several players connect from online, so we could make that more interactive, more interesting, more engaging, with a little bit time preparation that we could invest in putting it ahead of time. So there's all these parallels, all these things that could make happen, and there's definitely tremendous resources that would be required to pull it off. So I'm very patient with anticipating those opportunities, and I hope I'll be ready for my next feat.
Nice. Yeah, a lot of long-term vision, it sounds like. Regarding sponsorship opportunities, I was curious, how did the financing work for the Vegas thing? Were you compensated at all for it, or was this strictly promotional? And generally, how does it work if you're planning on putting on an exhibition like that?
Well, it's it's fascinating how many connections you can make between blindfold chess and, you know, things that could appeal to potential sponsors. For example, I went to the Berkshire Hathaway gathering, the annual
meeting. Nice, that's legendary.
Yeah, the annual meeting.
Yeah,
twice, two years in a row.
Okay.
And you know, it's just this big convention. I went for the one that was doing the 50 years anniversary.
So for those who don't know, this is Warren Buffett's company, and he's legendary for holding court at this meeting, giving a sort of state of the company update. But it's also he's got lifetime shareholders there who've become rich just by owning his stock throughout their lives. So he's obviously got a big cult following, and it gets a lot of media attention. So great opportunity to raise awareness about what you're doing, I would imagine.
Yes, and you know, Warren Buffett is definitely the probably one of the most well-accomplished investor in the world, the long-term investor. And then his partner, Charlie Munger, is just in terms of the sheer wealth, I think they at one point probably had like about $150 billion. And then the Berkshire Hathaway is actually the company that consists of different companies. And, that was like $300 billion. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting that, at a meeting like that, where people discussing the economy of the future, and you're just kind of giving this it's the style, I think, the style of presentation. There's a lot of rich people out there, but you know, not all of them are so well received as Warren Buffett. And you know, just in terms of like the insights, I heard in one of the talks or discussions is like, hey, there used to be, I believe it was last name Singleton, or one of the professors and a well-respected economist, they discussed, and as a matter of defining his intelligence, where they even mentioned, they say, hey, well, this guy was probably smarter than both of us, and they say, hey, well, he played he managed to play three games of blindfold chess simultaneously.
So, <Right. laughs>
so I mean, it's kind of the blindfold chess aspect, you know, the idea of blindfold chess fascinates a lot of people. And I think, Warren Buffett thinks it's valuable. Well, I mean, it's got to be, you know, Bill Gates invites Carlson, you know, you have, obviously great things happening for chess. And I think blindfold chess, even more so, is an attractive experience to be able to support. And
I think Grandmaster Patrick Wolf is a shareholder of Berkshire Hathaway, in addition to running a hedge fund. Have you come across him at the meetings?
I think he actually even did a blindfold match over at one of the meetings. So this year, actually, I was thinking of reaching out, but ended up having an event that weekend, so I didn't try too hard. But there's, I imagine there's also other opportunities for, you know, corporate events. I've done a number of like presentations and events that are kind of in that a similar league of opportunities, and I'm sure it's only going to expand and get better. As for Vegas sponsorship opportunities, it actually ended up being kind of self-sustaining, where we had the vision, and I had my friend and partner in this world record quest, Jennifer Valance, where she reached out to like a number of companies, like, you know, even my name, T-More, it's like more tea.
Right.
I was like, hey, let's reach out to tea companies because you like tea, or like fresh squeezed juice and this and that, and spin bikes. And so it was a lot of reaching out that she was doing, you know, in terms of, you know, some of the people that she actually knew even for closer personally, and then some of the people we met along the journey and shared information. Unfortunately, we didn't really get any kind of concrete opportunities, as opposed to Mark Lang, where he was approached, actually didn't even look for anything, and he was approached by a medical company to say, hey, well, what do you think this will take for us to make this happen? And ended up being enough for him to take a year off his programming job, and, you know, giving him time to prepare and make the pull off his feat of playing 46 games. So yeah, there's great opportunities out there, but as I said, you know, it's like if you're willing to give your life away, or you know, really invest all of your time, all of your energy into it, I mean, it's got to be worth it. Just the experience of doing it, I don't think you're necessarily looking for any kind of external reward, but just you know, have that kind of a pathway that you see, and as it's growing, it definitely gives that ultimate satisfaction of pursuing your mission.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you've got good perspective on, you know, I think a lot of people might be frustrated if, like, I mean, this is something that's never been done in human history. I mean, you're in the Guinness Book of World Records, and to not have companies recognize, or at least not yet, recognize what you're doing, I'm glad that you maintain a positive outlook about it. I'm also curious, I mean, so you're an incredible chess player, and as you said, your tournament chess is kind of on the back burner. So how are you able to support yourself generally for all of your travels? What sort of opportunities do you line up to support your going to the next place and doing the next thing?
Well, the kind of like the funny answer to that is actually I'm not able to support myself. through whatever I do. But, you know, seriously, actually, I have quite a few events, opportunities, you know, in terms of not only blindfold chess or like exhibition matches, especially with a lot more, you know, people kind of getting to know my what I'm capable of and what I have to offer. But I think teaching is great, and I have a number of students, you know, people that I work with consistently. And then like the months of May, I barely have any time aside from the chess events that I'm planning. And, you know, as I travel, like recently I've been going to Russia, which kind of, you know, or like Uzbekistan, the former Soviet Union. And despite the fact that I'm kind of from this area, it's you know, culturally close, and you know, I'm discovering you know, how great of an opportunity it would be to hang out here and maybe host an event. And there's obviously the, you know, the you know, coming back to that same perspective as, you know, the great companies, you know, the good international standard opportunities to pursue in terms of sharing the experience and gaining that support. And you know, that's something that I've been working on developing. But I think as I expand my horizons, and you know, that's kind of a fun. I think my vision at this point is very low key. As long as I can go out there, and then you know, especially the places that I really like or would really like to visit, and I make the trip, and I get to enjoy myself, meet some great people, and you know, just can make that journey sustainable. I think that's kind of the ultimate. You know, a way of sustaining the, you know, keeping up the momentum and keeping my lifestyle fun. So yeah, that's about it. I guess that's my ambitions for the achieving great riches in those.
Well, it's an inspiring worldview. Is there someone that you credit, like in your development, for helping you approach the world that way, or that shaped your thinking?
I think it's just a number of experiences, and yeah, definitely a certain knowledge. It's kind of like you won't be able to, you know, it's fun to accumulate. I was a lot better off and during different points in my life, and certainly will be, just with a little bit of focus. But and it's definitely great to have the opportunities to sustain whatever, you know, pursuits, even like the things that you're like, well, you know, they're just, you know, chasing, you know, after this dream, or maybe like trying to do better than the guy next door. But if ultimately that's something that's, you know, it's kind of like inside of you, you're like, well, you know, I know that's not necessarily the most spiritual way of seeing things, or this most, you know, the pursuit that I'm most capable of in terms of my, I don't know, most, I think a lot of people kind of see it as a spirituality where you're just like, well, why are you chasing money? You know, it's not spiritual. But I think that's, you know, like in terms of establishing a business, for example, which I have great business ideas, that I would like to fulfill maybe at a certain point within several years. Having a business and is the ultimate way of pursuing spirituality in terms of how you can approach it, you know, especially with more resources at stake, is how you're able to maintain yourself and treat other people. I think it's great to be able to undertake that kind of journey. And in terms of what I'm doing right now, as I said, I have a very low-key approach to that.
Would these business opportunities, would you stay in one place, or would you continue to travel in order to carry out that vision?
It seems like it would be tough to maintain that same pace of moving around the world. But a lot of the opportunities are actually on the internet, and I haven't really embraced any particular idea, or I actually don't know how this will shape up. But I do notice interesting things in the world, and hopefully as I continue my journey in the next few years, sharing blindfold chess experience, doing some of the fun things I envision, maybe picking up some business ideas, meeting good people I can establish contact and maybe start something together. I think especially with my background in business marketing, I think chess, there's certain business opportunities in promoting, especially like coaching chess, establishing chess in schools, which I was working for several years. It's a lot of fun. I think very rewarding. That's kind of like a great starting point for doing something that's kind of your effort, your little entity that you want to develop and make grow. I think that's a beautiful way to start and not have that kind of stakes that you would be investing and risking. But also kind of fun to get away from the world of chess for once and just do something maybe completely different or something that's, inspiring. For me, it's the green energy. It's at its strongest point at this point in time. But I feel like, especially with the oil and traditional ways of generating energy, but I think the world ultimately is driven through, energy resources and having the more sustainable way to approach the lifestyle would really determine the future of the planet. I think I had a friend that's like, oh man, it's kind of like Americans always want to save the world. So it's like, yeah, I guess it's contagious, right? So
right.
You kind of want to maybe approach things globally and just see what's not working exactly. And there's definitely some things to improve. And I'd say, just in terms of generating and using energy, I think the green energy, the sustainable energy is definitely the way to invest time and explore and really, once again, dedicate a lifetime.
So would you dig into the science of this, green energy? Would you have your own ideas about how to create it, or would you be more on the business side of things?
I'd say both. I think you kind of got to be obsessed with every little aspect of it, which a lot of times I'm noticing just inconsistencies, just having that kind of chess/business mindset. You see, why this guy's not adding value this way? Why they're not using up the resources? Why are they charging so much when they can charge a little bit less, get more opportunities, or vice versa? So it's that experience. For me, I think it's more of like just everything, really. I'm kind of, my weakness is, I'd say, well, the strength obviously is the just the global view, seeing the big picture and seeing the opportunities, going for it decisively. The weak points would be just the administrative part, trying to push the papers, just creating the order of things, the getting those the accounting part, I would say. So I need a great accountant as my best buddy,
right?
To make this work.
More of a big picture guy, I think.
Yeah.
So Timur, I can't let you get out of here without talking a little bit more about the mechanisms of the blindfold play. I know you've talked about this a fair amount, but this is a hardcore chess enthusiast audience. So what tips can you give chess players for how to improve their visualization and particularly just their ability to actually play game or multiple games blindfolded?
Well, actually, this is a great way for me to express my knowledge, my creativity, my approach to blindfold chess. And I know Kaltanowski put out a couple great books out there, but those kind of include his games, a few stories from his travel, which was truly impressive. I think he's like been to almost every. He went to almost every country in the world. Doing some kind of blindfold exhibition matches there. So it's amazing. But ultimately, I don't think he put out the kind of, like, especially one thing I would want to try is that night tour where he played three games blindfold. Three boards. He basically had the knight moving all around the chessboard, trying to hit every one of the squares but once, and he did it blindfolded one move at a time. Then he collect as he went through the tour. He would collect a piece of information from the audience, maybe their phone number, wherever it was on their mind, the name, the country, the place, and he would go through all those 64 on three boards, so 64 times three, and then as he would complete the tour on every one of the boards, and those probably were three different tours that he did on each one of the boards to make it more interesting. Then on the way back, he would bring the knight all the way back up to the initial square, and he would recollect every one of those little pieces of information on each one of those boards. So, how did he do it? Well, probably he, if you ask him back at that point, he was famous for, the crazy stories, whatever, so he probably give like one of those tricky answers. But I would love to find out what kind of technique, what kind of journey, what kind of memory palace he used to be able to pull that off. But I could share, just in terms of techniques for blindfold chess for an established chess player already, let's say 1600-1700. I think that's generally the intention for players of that strength and maybe up to 2200 to kind of practice and master their game. Well, one practical suggestion, you can actually just even go online and there's a blindfold chess mode on different websites, like chess.com, Play Chess. I don't know if ICC, I don't think ICC has it, but a lot of the websites, they have the blindfold chess mode. You can have all the pieces removed. I think Play Chess even has the option of having your chess pieces invisible and having your opponents visible, or vice versa. I mean, you can play around and try playing those kind of games. I even got to a point where I was able to play bullet blindfold chess.
I saw you do that on the Chess24 video with Jan. That was amazing.
just
shocking.
So
are you still actively trying to improve at blindfold, or do you feel like you have the skill now and now it's a matter of raising awareness and just growing the number you play?
Well, just in terms of my experience at the world record event, I think that was the ultimate test and the ability, and it was kind of revelational just because of that higher sensitivity as to what's going on. It's just that in the moment experience, because I couldn't give it this, a second shot really. It's just one time, and just considering all the effort and time that was invested into it, I had to really be on the in my 100% focus. And I had a lot of great insights. Like, at times I'll look at a position and I'll kind of see it from my opponent's perspective, which is kind of crazy, but it does happen when you multitask. So I'd kind of have that internal brain surgery where I just kind of like turn that board around and just start seeing it from the right perspective. Or I want to zone in and just really experience the game. I'll kind of see it in 3D where I get to experience each one of the pieces and maybe the order of visualizing the game. So just each one of those, I mean, it's actually kind of relevant as to, you know, facing many, many games, multiple games, but, you know, something people can try on, you know, with the smaller, there's, you know, smaller number of boards, or even actually one chess board. So, you know, putting out a book out there with the blindfold chess techniques and ways to get better for the very beginners, that it can benefit from it. You know, people just barely starting out, and they can use that idea of, you know, mental chess techniques of closing your eyes, being able to visualize, as well as some of the advanced players. I think that would certainly leave legacy, and share and promote the idea of blindfold chess with at least the world of chess.
Nice. Well, it's an amazing thing you're doing, Timur. I can't wait to see what you come up with next, and what records you break or what paths you take in life. Is there anything else, Timur, you'd like to discuss before we let you continue with your travels?
Well, I'd just say a couple opportunities for, I know the podcast comes out a little bit later, but just to kind of describe my current journey, I have an event at the Reform Chess Club on April 12th, that's in London. I believe I have a full house at this point. It's going to be kind of a fascinating experience being able to play out there. An event in London at Hackney Chess Club, that's April 26th. Then I'm actually going to be playing a tournament in Florida, in Orlando, Cocoa Beach, play a competition, do a little presentation. Then I got an event in Colorado on May 6th, then New York City and Marshall Chess Club. It's actually going to be a sided simul where I'll play up to 25 players. Then I'll be over at Super Nationals. I think that's kind of a fun get-together. I have a great team, a homeschooler team from Tennessee I'm supporting, encouraging in their journey. A lot of great friends I'm anticipating to meet. I got an event going on in Kansas. And later on in May, I'm actually going to have a chess camp in Colorado. And then actually another chess camp that I'm hosting with Karpov Chess School. This is kind of an annual effort that will be at the end of July. And you guys are welcome to check out Anatoly Karpov Chess School. The website is just right there. Come out for the chess camp and learn some blindfold chess as well.
Yeah, and you've got a pretty cool website too, blindfoldking.com. So people can check that out. And if they want to get in touch with you, can they email you through there?
Yeah, or they can fill out the form there, or just email me at champion@blindfoldking.com. As I mentioned, I'll be getting rid of my phone, so the email would be the only way of communication.
Yeah, reach him while you can, people. Pretty soon he's just going to be walking the earth. eyes closed, playing people blindfold, no phone. have to flag him down on the street. Well, Timur, thanks so much. I mean, I can't express, I think you're doing great things for raising awareness of chess, and I mean, just incredible feat you're accomplishing. So we'll all be watching, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Ben. This is, it's an honor, and it's just always fun to share ideas and talk about what I really enjoy. And having you as somebody who's inspired to share the experience of chess with in a very professional and interesting manner with all the great all the followers of your podcasts and the information that you put out there. I think this makes it even more so encouraging and interesting and truly fulfilling. Thank you.
Thanks, Timur. And hopefully, you've got such an interesting life. I think I'll want to have you on again in a few years. We can do a rundown. But thanks again, and good luck with everything.
Appreciate it. Goodbye to everybody.
Thanks for listening to Perpetual Chess. To hear more episodes, give feedback, or suggest guests, go to perpetualchesspod.com. If you like the show, please help me out by telling your friends and giving me a high rating on iTunes. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Perpetual Chess Podcast.
Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.